every 73 seconds, someone in America becomes a sexual assault victim. Every 9 minutes, that victim is a child, according to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we're going to be doing a podcast today on sexual awareness. My guest today is Jennifer Turner Lynn. She's the assistant director at REACH of Macon County, which handles these type of issues both in Macon County and in Jackson County, North Carolina. It's nice to have you on the program today, Jennifer.
Thank you for inviting us to participate.
How long has REACH been an organization, either with facilities in Jackson or in Macon County?
So REACH has been in operation in Macon County for 30 years. They have been providing interim services in Jackson County since February of 2012, when REACH of Jackson County closed unexpectedly.
Well, tell me what the mission plan or mission statement is for REACH, please.
So REACH's mission is to provide intervention, prevention, and educational services to victims and survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking.
And how many people do you actively service in a year's period of time?
So that would vary depending on if you were wanting to look at like counties, like specific counties, but in total, I would say that on average we serve anywhere between like 800 and 1,000 unduplicated clients within a period of a year.
Is REACH just in those two counties, or do they have REACH in other counties in North Carolina?
So there are a lot of agencies in our region that are named REACH, like REACH of Haywood, REACH of Clay, but none of us are actually affiliated in any way outside of the fact that we serve similar populations. Most of the counties in North Carolina, not all of them, but most of them have their own designated either domestic violence or sexual assault advocacy agency business. It could be that some of those are dual agencies like us, or we provide services for a variety of different types of victims. However, a lot of places have two agencies where one may provide domestic violence and one may provide sexual assault. But the vast majority of counties in North Carolina, at least, do have their own dedicated agencies. We certainly believe very strongly that every county should have its own agency. It's not really necessarily ideal for REACH of Macon, for example, to be providing services to both Macon and Jackson counties. When we stepped in to provide those interim services after there was a meeting of like a variety of stakeholders, both local and state level, and also different sister agencies and community supporters, we stepped in really just to provide interim services until another agency could be formed. Right now, we have been collaborating with a group called the Center for Domestic Peace, and they actually will be spinning off as of July 1st of 2020 to provide domestic violence services in Jackson County. We will still, at least for the next year, be providing supportive shelter services in Jackson County because the group won't have a brick-and-mortar shelter yet. But we will be continuing to provide sexual assault services in Jackson County at least for the next 5 years.
There's a correlation between domestic violence and sexual assault, is there not?
There is, and so certainly you have a lot of folks who might be in domestic violence relationships where they are also experiencing pretty high rates of sexual violence. And then you also have kind of this separate category of folks who are just experiencing sexual violence that doesn't actually have anything to do with a domestic violence or interpersonal violence relationship.
This podcast goes all over the world, but more specifically, it goes all over the United States. And if someone who is listening today says, well, that's great, but How do I get in touch with one of these agencies to help me with my problem? How would you advise them?
So there's a lot of different ways that you can reach out to a variety of different agencies in your state or, in your county. Certainly most states have what they call a coalition. So like we have the North Carolina Domestic Violence Coalition and the North Carolina Sexual Assault Coalition. Certainly you could reach out to those kind of state level agencies who should be able to assist you with identifying who your local provider is, whether that's through them talking to you and giving you a referral, or a lot of them have that information available on their website. The state-level funders, at least in North Carolina, so the North Carolina Council for Women is who funds every domestic violence and sexual assault, like, accredited or approved agency in the state. They also can assist with identifying regional resources for you because they have regional representatives. As far as our agency is concerned and how you can access our information, we have a pretty large variety of different types of platforms. So certainly you can call our office. We have a 24-hour crisis line, so there's never not going to be a time when somebody answers. And the phone number for Macon is 828-369-5544, and Jackson is 828-586-8969, but it all goes to the same agency. We also have a very active social media page on Facebook, Instagram, and then we also have a website as well. And you can reach us through any of those platforms.
Do you want to give the website address?
So the website address is reachofmaconcounty, all one word, all spelled out, .org.
Okay. So would you advise going to Google search and then putting in agencies for sexual assault or for domestic violence in order to get possibly a telephone contact number?
Yes. If you Google simply your city or your county and the keywords of either domestic violence, sexual assault, or human trafficking, you should be able to get a list of different places that you can contact to get a hold of someone.
Okay. Now, I'm quoting you from a newspaper article, and you said, "We have sexual violence, which is your overarching terminology, and then you have some specific terms. Anything from sexual harassment, sexual assault, and rape. North Carolina defines rape as forced vaginal penetration with a body part or object." And you said our agency defines rape much more broadly. Could you go over those terms, sexual harassment, sexual assault, rape, and sexual sexual trafficking. Could you go over those and give the people that are listening a kind of a concise definition that they could hang on with respect to, am I having a problem with this, and what do I call it?
So typically when we look at terminology related to sexual violence, we look at more, action-related or behavior-related adjectives or descriptors to help people understand the difference between all of them, because they are just kind of slightly different. It's nuanced. So certainly with rape, we feel that we define rape as forced penetration with a body part or an object, but it doesn't really matter where that forced penetration occurs on your body, whereas the legal definition for certain statutes related to rape is actually very much more narrow than that. We define sexual assault as like almost anything that doesn't include, forced penetration. So that would include things like inappropriate touching, fondling, forcing somebody to touch you. Those types of behaviors would kind of fall under the category of sexual assault. Then we look at things more like sexual harassment, and that sexual harassment isn't including any kind of touch necessarily. It's more about, does somebody tell jokes? Is it that somebody is saying that you have to do this kind of sexual favor in exchange for, this over here? Is it, forcing you to watch pornography? So there's kind of those types of things that don't necessarily involve some type of actual exchange where it's mostly words or actions. And then if you look at trafficking, I think that a lot of people think of human trafficking, especially we're talking about sexual trafficking right now, as kind of like what you would see on Dateline. And while that type of trafficking does happen, where you have individuals in foreign countries who are promised maybe special work here or assignments here, and then they're brought to the United States and basically they're held captive here as sex slaves. That is a very common form of trafficking, but in our region, in our area, while we see that form of trafficking, what we see more frequently is when individuals are basically forced into some kind of sexual servitude or slavery in exchange for some kind of commodity or goods. So that could be, I'm going to force you to have sex with different people in exchange for your rent, in exchange for me paying for your rent, or in exchange for any type of, it could be any type of commodity. So I'd say that those are all very kind of generalized definitions for what those terms mean. My guess is some people may define them slightly differently, but that is in general how we define those terms.
How about if you have a person who exposes himself in public, would that come under sexual harassment?
I'm not exactly sure how the law would quantify that. So we have a little bit of, you have kind of like how we define terms internally in our agency, and then you have this whole separate arena in the criminal justice system that's going to define actions and behaviors based on statutes and based on, you know, what you can charge people with. And so that might look very different than how we define terminology. Hopefully that makes sense. Yeah. It's, you know, two very different ways of looking at maybe the same behavior.
Okay. Later in the article, you said, or someone from the agency said, 21% of female victims and 5% of male victims ever report an assault. So that means that there's a lot more out there that people aren't aware of.
Correct.
And do you have any comment that you would make about that disparity between the figures of who's being assaulted and who's reporting it?
So I'd say that there are maybe three primary reasons why individuals don't report sexual violence that's occurred, that somebody has perpetrated on them. One is fear. They may be afraid, or maybe they, you know their offender or perpetrator, and so for them, it's really an issue of maybe life or death not to report. For some victims, not reporting comes out of kind of this rape culture that we live in, which is basically this idea that or belief that people aren't going to believe you. No one's going to believe you, and you might even question yourself. And so a lot of times you simply don't report because you just don't feel that anybody is going to believe you or anything like that. The third reason I think that people don't report is that sometimes people don't know to identify what's happened to them as sexual violence. If you take a child, for example, who was sexually molested or sexually abused, they may actually grow up believing that type of interaction or form of violence is actually normal, and that, you know, this is how everybody's family is, or this is what happens to every individual. And so they may actually just not even identify it as sexual violence, and so they simply don't report because they don't identify it that way.
Do you have an idea of a average of what percentage of children are sexually assaulted during their childhood?
No, I don't have like a concrete percentage. Obviously, I would say that percentage is fairly high.
I read an article and somebody said at least 25%. That's 1 out of 4 children during their childhood were sexually assaulted or molested by a family member or someone else. Would that be a minimum?
That would sound, I would say that's a, at a minimum. I would say that that's probably a fairly decent, educated guess based on the information that we have at hand. But yes, I would say that at a bare minimum, that's probably an accurate percentage.
Well, this whole topic of sexual assault comes down to, if you were sexually assaulted as a child, it could impact the entire rest of your life, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And you don't necessarily just get over it by trying to forget about it.
Correct. I don't know that anybody ever really gets over sexual assault or in any form. I think that most people just find a way to deal with it the best that they can. Mm-hmm.
You said one of your functions, you've got a 24-hour-a-day hotline, is to listen to the person that is calling in and then giving options as to what services are available that could help them, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How many or what percentage of the people who call in go on to seek some options, do you know?
Well, I guess it would depend on what type of option. So if the question is how many of the folks actually then proceed in the criminal justice system, like very few. how many people might reach out for counseling services, you know, I think you have a higher percentage there. You know, most people, to be honest, they just simply need to talk to someone. Most folks aren't necessarily looking for or needing to have other services beyond that immediate kind of crisis intervention, at least not not as far as like a big movement, like, you know, okay, I'm going to, you know, talk to the district attorney, we're going to prosecute. Most of it is just simply, I just need somebody to listen to me and somebody to tell me that they believe me.
Well, Reach believes that survivors of sexual assault at any stage in their experience can be helped through this active listening, even years after the assault. Do you ever get people that call in 10 years later and say, this has been bothering me for the last 10 years, I need somebody to talk to?
Oh, yeah, I would say that's actually fairly common. And it's certainly common of adult survivors who were molested or abused as children and are just now coming to a place in their adult lives that they can begin to say those words out loud or begin to deal with some of the emotions and experiences they had as a child.
Our district attorney in this area, Ashley Welch, said, despite some points of view, victims are never at fault. In no circumstances, in any situation whatsoever, is the victim to blame, period. That's a pretty strong statement, isn't it?
It is a strong statement. It's a true statement, and it is. And we are fortunate, obviously, that we do have leadership in our judicial system that recognizes that sexual violence is never the fault of the victim, but is always the fault and choice of the offender.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see if there was anything else I wanted to ask you about. Well, that gives me a kind of a good overview of Reach and probably of other agencies and other counties and other communities in the United States and what to do about it if you have some of these incidents in your life. So I really appreciate you coming on this podcast today to tell us about what you're doing in Jackson and Macon County. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell the audience today before we terminate our conversation?
I would probably just encourage folks to reach out to their local agency if they think that they've experienced some form of sexual violence and know that advocates who work in this field are trained not to pass judgment, but more or less to ensure that those individuals know what their rights are. I would encourage victims who may be wanting to have a forensic examination done, for example, to seek out an agency so that they can help support them through the process. There are so many things that local agencies can provide to victims, whether it's support through the criminal justice system, whether it's helping with domestic violence protective orders, or whether it's simply helping them navigate the medical system in relation to forensic examinations, or even victims' compensation. So if you've been assaulted and are moving forward through the criminal justice system, you are guaranteed certain rights through the criminal justice system, including certain types of compensation. And so a lot of folks just don't know that those resources are really available to them. I would also encourage individuals who maybe don't have immigration status here that we are a safe place. We don't report immigration status. We don't even ask about immigration status. And that we, again, can help you navigate what can be a very complicated system.
So you have an agency set up and everything, but if you have been a victim of sexual assault, would your advice be to go to the emergency room for forensic examination or call you first? What would you recommend?
So from an advocate's perspective, I actually would encourage them to contact an advocacy agency first. You know, a lot of agencies do have strong relationships with their hospital systems, and so within those hospital systems, you know, hopefully they have the type of relationship that they're going to contact their agency anyway and say, hey, you know, or let the victim know that, you know, hey, there's this advocacy agency, they can help you. In some cases, you know, a forensic examination can be very helpful to a victim. It can allow them, they can do it anonymously, it can help them have closure, or it could help them move forward in the criminal justice system. And then for other individuals, a forensic examination is incredibly traumatizing, and maybe they're not moving forward in the criminal justice system, or maybe they really, after hearing about what is entailed in the forensic examination, they decide, I don't really know that I want to go through with this. That's why having an advocate is beneficial, because they can make sure that their rights are respected. Our job is to basically present them with a menu of options. These are all of the options that you have available to you. Here are possible outcomes. Now you can decide what you want to do moving forward and how can we support you. So my recommendation would be to contact an agency and an advocate first and allow them to help them through that process.
And if they can't, then it's still good advice to go to the emergency room for an examination, or to try to get an examination, because especially if you're going to try to get into the criminal justice system, you need that exam within a reasonable length of time after the incident, right?
Well, so the forensic examination can, the kit can certainly support efforts if you're choosing to move forward through the criminal justice system. You also can have the kit done anonymously, and basically, at least you have the evidence. If at some point you decide you want, like later, that you want to move forward with prosecution or law enforcement intervention. And, you know, not every emergency room has a forensic nurse available on site. However, my guess is that every emergency room should have the resources available to help an individual identify where they can go for a forensic exam.
Great. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the program today and helping us educate the people that are listening, because this month, April, is National Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month.
Thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it.
It has been a pleasure to have you listening to my show today. My sincerest desire is for you to get something from it that will make your life richer, fuller, and in this time of coronavirus pandemic, safer. I am Reverend Wynn Henderson. As an ordained Christian minister and a retired medical doctor, I have a dual perspective to bring you content to solve problems in your life. Freedom from Addiction and Share Your Mission is the longest-running, single-hosted and produce spiritually based radio internet talk show in the country. It has been continuously running for the last 20 years. I introduce you to celebrities and non-celebrities alike who have something to say about the disease of addiction in its 30-plus different forms and about the importance of finding your mission or purpose in life and then and acting on it. My mission is to spread a message that there is a cure for all addictive behaviors. This is a spiritual cure, and the treatment program is profiled in my book, Freedom from Addiction 3. It is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. If you meet three simple criteria, everyone gets well. I have two free resources where you can start your journey. First, follow the link to my podcast, which is www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com, spell Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N. And for more detail about the treatment plan, go to www.revwynhendersonmd.com. There are also free things on the website to expand your knowledge about these issues. You could also follow me on Twitter. The account is @HugoTheArtist. Here you will find inspirational and educational tweets daily. If you have been listening to this program and you are in the vicinity of Jackson or Macon County and would like to contact REACH, their numbers are 828-369-5544 and 828-586-8969.